Support for Sound Ideas comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, the best hearing device center in the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards for the sixth year in a row. And now BNA welcomes Dr. Kristen Johnson to their team of audiologists. Dr. Johnson earned her Doctor of Audiology degree from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and her personal experience with a movement disorder adds a relatable compassion that fuels her passion for helping others. More information about Dr. Johnson is available at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's public media. Bloomington Normal homeless shelters have kept the coronavirus out of their living quarters. The safety precautions come at a cost. At a time of year, demand for service is greater than ever. Eric Stock reports.
Matt Burgess is chief operating officer at Home Sweet Home Ministries in Bloomington. And some days he's a desk clerk, too.
I ordinarily say that I'm not qualified to work at our front desk, but I have been helping out that team to the best that I can at different times.
The ministry banned all volunteers at the start of the pandemic to limit the potential for COVID infections, so all staff members of the homeless shelter and soup kitchen have taken on extra tasks. That's one of several steps the shelter took to keep people safe. Home Sweet Home only serves meals on site to people who are staying there. The rest can get a hot meal to go. Staff members get tested for COVID every few weeks. Residents get tested if they show symptoms. Masks are mandatory, and the shelter removed more than a dozen beds to maintain social distancing. The shelter is now at capacity. Burgess says the shelter will still do what it can to help the most vulnerable who need a place to stay. So far, those steps have worked. Home Sweet Home has had no residents and one staff person test positive for the coronavirus since March. At the Salvation Army Safe Harbor Shelter in Bloomington, a few staffers have had to isolate after a possible exposure, but Social Services Director Joanna Callahan says the shelter has been COVID-free.
I am honestly surprised, but also on the other hand, just incredibly thankful. I know that the staff that we have here is absolutely excellent, and we do everything we can to keep ourselves and others safe.
Safe Harbor has cut the number of available beds in half. Both Home Sweet Home and the Salvation Army check staff and guests regularly for COVID symptoms, and they have to clean more than ever before. Callahan says supplies are expensive and often scarce.
It's not exactly easy to just go to the store and buy, you know, gloves anymore because the shelves are empty. Even small things like toilet paper and cleaning and disinfecting wipes.
The extra steps the shelters have had to take cost money at a time when social service agencies are stretched thin and need is often at its greatest. Both shelters say donors have stepped up to fill the void. Callahan says church groups that typically give their time by serving meals have donated supplies instead. Matt Burgess says Home Sweet Home secured grants and money through the Paycheck Protection Program to get by.
Those have helped to close the gap on what our normal expenses would have been compared to that higher level of expenses this year.
The funding can help sustain nonprofits during a time when conventional fundraising efforts are much harder. The Salvation Army relies on those red kettles set up outside stores during the holidays. Its Make a Difference campaign hopes to raise $500,000 to pay for services year-round. But fewer people are going to those stores during the pandemic. More shop online instead. The Salvation Army's Joanna Callahan notes it's been trending that way for years.
I think COVID aside, I mean, the online shopping has definitely been a bit of a hit for us, truthfully, but we've been trying to be creative.
The Salvation Army encourages groups to raise money online among friends, co-workers, and fellow church members. It'll also rely more on mail-in donations. Matt Burgess at Home Sweet Home says its big annual fundraiser, a homeless simulator where donors spend a night in a car, will look different this year because of the pandemic, but he says donors have found other ways to help.
Many of our donors who have been longtime donors have stepped up knowing that there is increased need. They have stepped up their giving during this time.
While unemployment remains high, largely because of the pandemic, demand on these shelters is down in some ways. Home Sweet Home distributes several thousand turkeys and holiday food boxes every Thanksgiving. Burgess says they didn't need nearly as many this year.
Despite all of the news about people traveling around the country, I think the large gatherings were down, and so maybe not as many people wanted that big turkey.
The Salvation Army recently opened its warming center where people can sleep on cots in an overflow area to get in from the cold. Social Services Director Joanna Callahan says aside from that surge when cold weather hit, demand for beds has been lower than expected.
We found that the demand for shelter hasn't been as high as anticipated. Part of that has to do with different programs and governor's orders to prevent eviction and things along those lines.
Governor J.B. Pritzker's eviction moratorium is set to expire at the end of the year. I'm Eric Stock.
The Salvation Army is seeking donated coats, especially for children 5 and under and adults. They can be dropped off at the Salvation Army office on West Washington Street weekdays. Bloomington mayoral candidate Jackie Gunderson is fresh from a campaign for McLean County Board. Gunderson ran on a platform of inclusivity and giving everyone a seat at the table. The message is carrying over to her pursuit of the mayor's office. Dana Vollmer talked to Gunderson about why now seems like the right time to run.
It was definitely not in my original plan, but as my bid for county board wrapped up, I was super proud of the race that we ran, and I was ready to get some rest. But I was watching at the time, only one person had submitted their packet to run. And so just before that, I had made the decision that I wasn't seeing anyone running that looked like me and lived like me. And I just thought maybe this is a time to harness the momentum I have from the race that I just wrapped up and put my energy towards running this race.
What would your priorities be for helping get Bloomington on the right track or continuing its trajectory?
So my priorities, what I'm focused on is our community. I have a vision and I have empathy for my neighbors, and I want to see a mayor that looks and lives like me, like I said. And so obviously community is my number one focus. That's no different from the previous race that I was running. I have been so blessed by this community, and I want to be able to turn those blessings into real change for our community and bless those around me as well.
What do you think should be some priorities for kind of revitalizing downtown and keeping those businesses healthy?
I love downtown. We are big downtown Bloomington supporters. We frequent many businesses down there, and I think the revitalization that has happened down there has been incredible, and I love to see the businesses thrive. And I know that outside of COVID, they have done incredible work downtown. And so I, in all things, want to be an advocate for business owners, not just downtown, but all of the small business owners in Bloomington. They're members of our community. They're our neighbors. And I do believe in economic development that benefits the people that live here, that my actual neighbors. I want to make sure that there's a comprehensive approach as we look at the complex issue of how to help small businesses stay here and plant their roots here and be successful here.
And you mentioned kind of the financial strain that the COVID-19 pandemic has put on businesses. That's obviously something that affects the city as well. How would you kind of address the issues that we're facing and get the city back on a firmer financial footing?
Yeah, and I didn't mention this before, but we're small business owners as well. And so watching this whole pandemic unfold, you know, we're all doing this together for the first time. Nobody has all the answers. And so there have been times where I've thought, oh, ouch, that hurts us, or, oh, that benefits us, certainly throughout this. And I know other business owners have felt both ends of that spectrum along the way. And so I don't have all the answers either. I think this is a really complex issue, and I believe that it takes a comprehensive approach. I think it's going to require a leader that can bring all of the important people to the table so that they can problem solve together.
And so how do you kind of involve residents in the decision-making process for the city, not just on, you know, the COVID funding issue, but on any plethora of issues?
You know, my experience looks different than some of the other candidates, and my background is not just in my professional life, but also in my extracurriculars I've had a leadership role in several different organizations where coming together is important, and I have the skills and the ability to be able to collaborate with people. And so the first thing is being open to hearing what people have to say and giving people the opportunity to share it, but not just relying on them to reach out to us. We need to be reaching out. We need to be going to those people and offering them the opportunity to share what they believe and not waiting for them to show up at City Hall or submit a public comment or contact their rep.
Jackie Gunderson is a procurement manager at Illinois State University overseeing capital projects. She also serves as director of the Penguin Project of McLean County. The nonprofit offers performing arts for children and young adults with developmental disabilities. Gunderson will share the April ballot with City Council member Mboka Mwilambwe and entrepreneur Mike Straza. Educator Misty Metros is running as a write-in candidate. Gunderson spoke with Dana Vollmer. An Illinois State University student with a gift for words and a heart for equality has been nationally recognized. Student reporter Tiffany Jackson introduces us to the winner of this year's America's Best College Poet competition.
English education major Nadia Williams brought her best content to the stage as she battled it out with students across the country for a cash prize and bragging rights. Williams said as time led up to the award, she was doubtful and nervous.
There were three rounds. And every round, I always psych myself out because I'm like, oh my God, I could have said that better. I could have protected my voice more. Oh, what if they don't like the poem? What if it's not as analytical as people are looking for?
But the feeling subsided soon after. When she was announced as the winner, tears fell from her eyes.
We get to the final round, and they were supposed to announce my scores before the final poet, but they didn't. And I'm just sitting here, I'm praying to God. I'm like, God, I don't know what's going on. I'm like, if I don't win, it's okay. And then, like, they announced to me that I won. All of the tears ran down my face. I had on makeup that day. I was crying so hard.
Here's Williams reciting from Black Boy Magic.
Black boy, be a Darnell, Sean, Jay, Deshaun, Dre, Quan, or TJ. Be unorthodox names, but never unethical. In heaven, black boys can be carefree, drinking Arizonas, eating Skittles, playing music too loud, wearing a hoodie.
Most of Williams' poetry resonates with the African-American community. She says of the reason she got into poetry is it allows her to express emotions that are often taboo.
For the majority of my life, I've always been told that little black girls should be quiet. Little black girls are meant to be seen and not heard. Because when you're an outspoken black woman, they always determine that you're angry or you're bitter or you're mean. And poetry allows me to be as black as I need be with no repercussion.
Williams said it's played a huge role in her confidence.
Poetry changes how I project my voice. In today's society, a black woman expressing herself is dangerous. It's lethal. And poetry allows me to get away with something that feels illegal.
As stereotypes grow as a consequence for challenges faced by members of the black community, some choose to withdraw from conversations. Williams said, growing up, it was words from black women that instilled a sense of hope in her, and that those same voices are needed for the new generation of black kids today.
If it wasn't for the words of my mother, if it wasn't for the words of Maya Angelou, shoot, if it wasn't for the words of Beyonce, like, where would black women be without inspirational black women speaking into them? There is so much power in words coming from black women. And we see that every time Michelle Obama decides to share with us who she is being a black woman from the South Side of Chicago.
At one point, Williams almost quit poetry. After coming in third place in a competition brought by the National NAACP, she began to feel she wasn't good enough to continue on.
This time around, I was really giving up on myself in poetry because I felt like I was so on fire for poetry in the beginning, and it seemed like the fire began to fizzle out. So the day I won, it reaffirmed that this is something I was supposed to be doing, that my voice is something that needs to be consistently heard.
In the future, Williams says she hopes to make a difference in the way poetry is taught.
I want to focus on alive poets and poets of the last two or three decades. I want to change what poetry looks like to people. Because when people think of poetry, they think of Emily Dickinson, Robert Frost, like the canonized poet. So I mainly want to be a professor of my craft.
Williams says she's accomplished a lot within the craft, but there's plenty more milestones to go. I'm Tiffany Jackson.
Nadia Williams plans to graduate from ISU next year. She plans to get her master's degree in creative writing with a focus on poetry. She wants to become a poetry professor. This is 89.1 FM, WGLT and WGLT.org, and Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Normal singer-songwriter Leah Marlene's first full-length album is a curveball for those that came to her through her up-tempo, hook-laden debut EP. The Space Between is a ballad-heavy, introspective 8-song release full of doubts and the stress of expectations. Marlene tells John Norton it was an intentional shift from previous efforts.
Like, my last EP was just kind of like my first songs that I co-wrote, and they didn't really personally mean a lot to me. It was just like a next step in making music and learning how to do things. And so this is the first record that I've put out where this is like totally me.
But knowing is so hard when I'm searching for a dream.
So let's open with the opening song called Winding Roads, and it seems the narrator is headed down a wrong road somewhere and is really struggling to understand who she is, which is a little bit unlike the little bit I've gotten to know you, right? Someone who's real confident and knows where she's headed and how she's getting there.
Well, college changes a gal. So last year was my first year of college. I went to Belmont. I still go to Belmont in Nashville. It was really, really hard. And I wrote that my first semester. I lived in a dorm with a roommate who's awesome. But you're always around people. Like, I can never get personal space. And I didn't realize how introverted I actually was until I was in that environment.
Winding roads have no place to go. And they don't apologize for.
So I would drive all the time just to clear my head. And there's this one road in Nashville that was just had the most beautiful winding roads. And it was always just like a very poetic thing for me every time I'd drive there. And so that song, when I wrote it, every time I sing it, whatever, it's just like, it's just that picture in my head. That was one of the first songs where I was like starting to process through, like, from freshman year, and just like really not knowing who I was anymore and just like what's happening. So that was kind of like the opening to what this album is and was going to be.
I'm restless. It's time for something else. Lack of control chills my drifting. So I run on inhibition.
The name of the album, is it real interesting? The Space Between. I've got in my mind what some of that could be. It could deal with the space between notes. It could be, as you hint at in one of the songs, I think, the space between highs and lows.
Yeah, okay. So I'm glad you asked about that because it's not really like a huge outright thing that I say in the album. It was very much the space between like what people see of me, like very charismatic and on like another level all the time. And then like I was really silently miserable and suffering for a very long time. And so like I think it's the space between like what was really going on and like what other people perceive of me. But like everybody has their lines and the space between the lines in their story. And so I just think like reading between the lines is a really neat concept, and the space between just like perfectly sums up what this album is without taking away room for anybody's story, because anybody can have their own lines and their own space between them.
Let's go to another song on the album, To Be Happy.
It's seating me up. I wasn't made for this. Expectation asks for more of me than I could ever give a try.
It's one of at least, I think, a couple of songs that referenced expectations.
Yeah, I've always been somebody that does everything all the time to like the nth degree. So expectations going into college were super duper high. Like Belmont was my dream school, and just going to Nashville and all that stuff, there's just so much opportunity career wise but also like socially or just like life, like things in every aspect of my being. And so like I totally did not want to take anything for granted, and to me I guess that meant doing everything all the time, which was so terrible and toxic and exhausting. A lot of these songs are just reflecting on my ability as a human being limited and not being able to do everything that I expected to be able to do, or feeling bad that I'm like not making the most of all these like blessings in my life because I'm really limited in my resources and in my energy.
And I'm well aware of all I'm on, the infiniteness haunts my thoughts, and I know I can do better, pull myself together.
Even on expectations, the album musically was not what probably a lot of people expected. It wasn't what I expected to hear. It's very subdued musically. Was that a reaction to not having to live up to expectations, that you learned that you could go in a different direction? Or is this something was conscious, you knew that you wanted to do this anyway?
That's one thing that I've always been pretty confident in. Like, I just want to release whatever the heck I want to release. Like, I don't really care. The people that enjoy my music will enjoy my music. And if it's not their thing, then that's okay. But like, I just need to do what is right for me. So like, all the music in this was what I needed during this time. And I know that other people that go through similar things, like, it might be something that they might appreciate or need during that time. And so, like, I did not want to stray from that. I wanted to be completely authentic to where I was.
And I used to be someone else trying to be okay.
Normal singer-songwriter Leah Marlene speaking with WGLT's John Norton. Her new album, The Space Between, is available on her website and all the streaming services. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. You can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories at WGLT.org.